Testing 1, 2, 3, hello! Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Friday, May 30th, 2014. I'm Sam Minter. It's about 21:40 UTC, which is like very late for me to be doing this. And yes, normally I would be at work right now, but a number of things conspired against that. So I've got So why is Ivan not here? First of all, Ivan is not here because over the last week he had a little incident in his home where his sprinkler system malfunctioned and flooded his kitchen and caused a lot of damage, and I guess, you know, his kitchen is all messed up, and other parts of the house were affected as well, and they've got all that dehumidifying gear in and all of that kind of stuff, and he's been working with insurance companies and contractors and blah 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 and all this kind of stuff. And so at our normal time to record this week, he'd actually just finished up a bunch of stuff of that kind of stuff and was having a late dinner with his wife and couldn't make it. And he's let me know that not only couldn't he not make it this week, although he didn't tell me about not making Wednesday till, you know, like 5 minutes before we were supposed to record. But it's okay. I understand. All kinds of crazy stuff going on. But he let me know that he's not going to be able to make it next week either, because he anticipates still being dealing with a lot of that kind of stuff. I put out the call for co-hosts. It was a little bit too late notice. I didn't get anybody for this week. There are a couple of you out there who keep bugging me about this, but whenever there's the opportunity, you never take me up on it. However, our listener Bruce did take me up on it for next week. Everybody can look forward to me and Bruce doing the show next week. So we'll see what that's all about. He's, of course, been on the show a couple of times before talking about one thing or another. Anyway, so that was going on. Today, why am I home? Well, Friday, I usually Friday morning is the time that I usually, I don't have early morning meetings on Friday like some other days. So often my pattern on Fridays is to assemble the podcast and put it out, assemble the podcast Friday morning, and then start it cooking and processing and doing the stuff it has to do, which doesn't take that long, but it's a little bit of wait. I start that, and then I often go to work at that time, and then, you know, during lunch or another break at work, usually lunch, I'll actually, you know, push the buttons to actually make the post about the podcast live and stuff like that. That's a fairly typical Friday pattern for me. Often, if I'm working from home on Fridays, I will actually, you know, do the podcast-related stuff in the morning and actually not dive fully into work until around noon, and then make up for it by continuing to work into the evening later than I would otherwise. This week is not of those things. Alex has been off and on not feeling great this week. My wife has also been not feeling great this week. Anyway, he was homesick. So I had been planning on working from home today anyway, but ended up just staying home with him. My wife has some school things that she's working on this afternoon. So it's me and Alex. And I realized I wouldn't be getting all that much work from home stuff done with him. So also took advantage of the time to finish putting up our new projector. I tweeted a little while ago that my old projector, it basically started having some weird image distortion issues and blah, blah, blah. I guess something melted. It needed a new bulb, and I guess the old bulb we left in a little bit too long and it caused some damage. I don't know. Anyway, it wasn't worth repairing. It was several years old. So we ordered a new projector, and it needed a new mount, and it needed to do this. And I finished putting it up this morning while Alex was sitting quietly on the couch playing. We put a bunch of drugs into him, and he's feeling a little bit better now, but he had a nasty cough this morning. Anyway, so that leaves me in the afternoon on Friday actually recording this damn thing solo because, again, too late to get volunteers to do it with me this week, which is much later than I usually do it. Anyway, that's probably about all that you guys care about in terms of that. Oh, and there comes Alex. I'd set him up watching some TV on the new projector. How do you like the new projector, Alex? Of course, he's just going to bark. Anyway, I did have one piece of feedback, too, from a recent show. And I'll get that for you guys in a minute. I'll get that guys. Blah, blah, blah. I'll get that for you guys in a minute. But first, I'll get Alex started on something new, and we'll be back. We got feedback. I'm probably going to talk a little bit about Google's new car, a little bit about the new SpaceX Dragon 2 announcement, I might touch a little bit on the Snowden stuff from this week, but probably not that much because I didn't actually watch it.
Daddy!
And maybe I'll touch a little bit on the U.S. Daddy. On the Santa Barbara murder spree and the Yes All Women tag. Not sure about that because, I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, stopping for now. We'll take a break. Back after this. I'm being attacked. Okay, here we go. We're back. Alex is back downstairs doing stuff, stuff that four-year-olds do. Let me start with a little bit of feedback real quick. This is from somebody after I'd been talking about vacations and things like that. So Yvonne is right was the subject of this. And my computer talks. It's 2,200 hours. It's wonderful. Yvonne is right. You and your family should take a real vacation, even if only for 1 week. If not Disney, there are nice places in Washington to try, like at the coast, to see and wade in the ocean. Or there's Vancouver, Canada, if all the passports are in order. Actually, right now, I'm the only one in the family who has a valid passport. Everybody else needs to get their act together and get them. We're restricted somewhat in where we can go. But it is on the very, very long list of things to do to get everybody their passports. She also suggests a train ride to somewhere or someplace this summer. Start playing soon. She mentions that she knows we've mentioned that, we've done little one-day things here and there, but, So she thinks Yvonne maybe was a little bit hard on me. I'm, by the way, summarizing and condensing this stuff. She also says that I should go to my 25th reunion so I don't have any new regrets, but asks if it's very soon, like maybe the end of May, like this weekend, or maybe next weekend at the beginning of June. Actually, my high school reunion is not until August, beginning of August. So I have a little bit of time to finish deciding and all that kind of stuff. Although I think the special pre-order pricing on tickets and all that stuff expires this weekend. But, I think you can show up even the day of, if you want to. You just pay a little bit more for the tickets. But for me, since it's all the way on the other side of the country, the price of the tickets is trivial compared to the price of getting there and hotels and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not really worried about that. But I think where we're leaning right now is it's probably just going to be me if anybody goes. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And then she had some questions about listening to the show and the best ways to do it and all that kind of stuff, which I won't answer on the show because each of you have a different method you use to listen to the show, so it would be irrelevant. Although I will mention one thing. One point of confusion that has existed for a long time, if you actually listen to the show by going to my website and pressing play there, the little widget I have that you can hit play there used to work perfectly and everything, but at some point there was an Apple update to Safari, and all of a sudden all the controls were blank until you pushed them, which made it very hard to use. And I've been hoping that at some point that bug would just be fixed. Because I've played around with a variety of other little widgets to play, and this one actually is the better of them, of the ones I've played around with. This affects both iOS Safari and Macintosh Safari. I think Windows Safari isn't supported anymore, so forget about that. But all the other browsers, if you bring it up, show a proper set of controls, and you can see a play button and a pause button and all this kind of stuff. But all of that is invisible in Safari, which is really freaking annoying. And I've been hoping that Apple would fix it. But it's been like 2 years now and they haven't. So if I ever had time, I would look for another widget again and explore my options. One of the difficulties here, of course, is that I can start using a new widget on new shows, but all my archives still have the old widget. But perhaps I just shouldn't care, because going back to all the old episodes and changing it would be a real pain. I don't know. In the meantime, just click where you think a play button should be and it works. Also, of course, you can click through to where I say download the MP3. That'll give you a slightly different experience that may be better. And also, of course, you can hit the subscribe in iTunes button and then just play it in iTunes. And then, of course, aside from that, a whole bunch of you perhaps listen on podcast software of various sorts for your PC or for Android or for iOS. And, of course, then there's a link to the RSS feed. But, of course, if you're listening to this, you already have some method of listening to this. But perhaps you're looking for a better one. I don't know. Anyway, enough about the feedback. Let me move on quickly to the thing I said that maybe I wouldn't talk about. Let's talk briefly about the guy in California who killed a bunch of people and left all kinds of written and video manifestos, basically talking about how he was really upset because women wouldn't have sex with him. I mean, it really boiled down to that. So first, a little bit about this itself, and then we'll move on to the yes, all women thing that moved on from that. Look, this is, I'm sure that his misogyny played a role in this, but fundamentally, in the end, this was yet another disturbed person who... had issues that did not get dealt with properly through, mental health support he should have been getting. His family had reported him to the police. They knew there was something wrong. They knew he was potentially violent. And I think there was a failure here. The police did follow up, but they didn't look very deeply. This guy probably should have been institutionalized as a potential threat to others gotten some help. That didn't happen. and he ended up killing a bunch of people. I believe he actually killed more men than women in the end. He had all his guns legally. I don't know that there's any particular thing that could have been done with increased checks or anything else like that that would have stopped him from legally getting his guns. I've said before, I'm not a fan of guns. I don't see any particular reason for individuals to own them. But on the other hand, I don't know that there's a lot we can do in terms of just saying, no guns or anything like that. Obviously, if it had been a little harder to get, maybe he wouldn't have had them. Maybe he would have done less damage. I don't know. But we're not at a point in our national discussion on this issue where those kinds of options are viable politically. That's obvious from what happened after Newtown. So I don't see the point of spending a lot of time, rehashing the gun control type issues. Especially since all of the kinds of things that, I've always said there may be things that reasonable people in the middle can agree on in terms of gun control, in terms of some level of control that you could do that's not onerous, that doesn't stop sort of the, legitimate people from getting their guns for recreational or even self-defense purposes. Even though, like I said, I don't really believe those purposes are really all that great, but whatever. Assuming you believe that those are legitimate purposes, there are probably things that we could do that would not restrict those people, but would keep a few crazies from getting their guns. This is not one of those cases. He was not going to be on anybody's list. Maybe if a couple weeks ago the police had taken the warning seriously and put him in an institution and for his own protection and the protection of others and started getting him help, maybe he would have been on such a list in 6 months, but he certainly wasn't going to be on a list already based on what had happened so far. So I don't think that anything within the realm of, even what you could say, quote unquote, reasonable people could agree from both sides on sort of limited restrictions. I don't think this falls into one of those cases. So moving on from guns, after this happened, a number of sites, you started getting the internet trolls coming out and saying things along the lines of, "Hey, look, women, here's what happens when you don't, if one of you had just had sex with this guy, this wouldn't have happened." And things like that, that were absolutely ridiculous, of course. Here comes Alex again. Hello, Alex. Oh, you found some glasses? I think those are your, one of your mom's pairs.
They're not anymore. They broke.
Oh, they broke? Oh. Did they get stepped on?
No, look.
I see.
It's twisted.
It is twisted. Yeah. Yeah, I twisted it back a little bit, but they probably still aren't good. Okay, we'll put it to the side. Thank you for bringing it to me. Okay. Can you let me finish? I'm going to keep talking. I guess not. We're going to take another break. I'll talk a little bit about Yes All Women when I get back.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back, and I did exactly that thing that you're not supposed to do if you're a good parent, which is I put on a movie for Alex and put him in front of the TV. So, anyway, I also made some train track circles for him, but he wasn't satisfied with what I did. He said I did it wrong, so I went to the TV model instead. But I'll be back down to play with him in a little while. Promise, really. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yes, all women. Look, I promise here, I'm going to be really short on this because fundamentally, I'm a guy, I'm alone, I don't have anyone to bounce this off of, and specifically, I don't have a female voice to bounce this off of at the moment. And I don't feel fully comfortable discussing this topic without a woman in the room to express her viewpoint and talk about it. And I could say some crap, but I don't think I'm really there. I mean, the one thing that I will say before I move on to other topics is that if you read the Yes All Women hashtag, there was one article by Arthur Chu that I also tweeted specifically about sort of nerd culture and this stuff. This is fairly eye-opening for lots of men because you don't necessarily hear all of this stuff all the time. Women tend not to speak about this as openly as you've heard on this hashtag. And so I think a lot of men aren't conscious of this stuff at all. Certainly not necessarily when other people are doing it. They think that, you know, occasionally maybe there's an asshole here or there who does it, but they don't have the, and certainly I didn't. And I generally don't, although I've thought about this at various times before, and having two women in the house, I've heard some of this stuff. But I don't think the sort of intrinsic awareness is there that this isn't an, you know, oh, every once in a while there's an asshole. This is like a continuous part of everyday experience that almost all women, if not all women, certainly in our culture, and probably worse in others, experience in terms of how they're treated by men, the assumptions men have about them, the sort of feeling of entitlement that you hear about men feeling in terms of what they should get from women, and of course, this Yahoo who killed people in California, in Isla Vista, is sort of you're all the worst stuff rolled up into once. And and you've heard like the not all men hashtag that says not all men are like this. And of course not all men are like this, but that's not kind of the point here. The point is that enough men are that these kinds of behaviors you hear about are not an exception, but they're the everyday experience of many, many women on an ongoing basis all the time. And I also tweeted, like, look, you know, I read the article about Arthur Chu and nerd culture and how nerds interact with women and some of the passive-aggressive stuff that happens there. And I tweeted, I'm ashamed to say that I recognized a lot of that in myself. Specifically in some incidents in my 20s where I was a little bit off the deep end about one particular woman who didn't reciprocate my feelings. And we were sort of close as friends, but she didn't want anything more. And I was solidly friend-zoned, as they say. And I did not react well. And it was a very bad and tense time. And I did things that today I'm ashamed of. At the time, I'd say, you know, maybe I knew better intellectually, but emotions took over, and I did things that, like I said, I'm deeply ashamed of today. And you know, if that woman's out there today and listening, I don't think she is, but if she is, you know, I'm sorry, and I've said this before a couple times, I think, but it's a good time to say it again. I'm sorry for how I acted. You know, and look, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of this comes down to sort of the misunderstanding of signals and things like that. And you, Some of the conversations here are about how, and I've read some conversations on Reddit on this and in some of the articles, where many women, you know, won't just say an outright flat, no, go away, I'm not interested, because that can potentially be dangerous, because you never know how the guy is going to react to that. So instead, there's often a more ambiguous result that, if you're properly reading the signals, clearly say go away. But if you're not properly reading the signals, it can be taken as an invitation for more conversation or more engagement or just try harder or whatever. And but the women are caught in a catch 22 because, you know, oftentimes the more vociferous, is that even the right word? The clearer "I'm not interested, go away" message can be taken badly too. Not to mention the fact that, you know, hey, I'm not interested in that, but yeah, I still want to be friendly. I don't want to be an asshole to you. Friendly is okay. Should be a legitimate response and not taken as an invitation of, well, she didn't shut me down, so therefore I got to just keep trying. Because, hey, there is a legitimate notion of being friends is okay. Not everything has to be a romantic relationship. Bottom line is, reading that hashtag, you know, you look at all the bad behavior and you become aware of just how prevalent it is and how often it's out there. And like I said, I'm ashamed of some of my own behavior in the past, hopefully the distant past, and hopefully I don't do any of that kind of stuff anymore. Some of it's very subconscious, so I don't know. You become ashamed and say, look, I can't believe this stuff is really, people really act like that. And at the same time, I can understand why it happens, but the women have a point, have a very, very good point. And a lot of this behavior that's sort of tolerated, because it's not out in the open and it's not called out, and men are very often blind to it because we're just stupid, okay? We're just stupid. We're not paying attention and we're stupid. So when we're not engaging in the bad behavior ourselves, which does happen, we don't necessarily notice it. And for very good reasons, it's not called out all the time, but maybe it needs to be called out a little bit more, and maybe it needs to be shamed a little bit more. So that the culture can gradually change. I don't know. I've talked more than I feel I probably should have. Again, maybe some other time we'll have a woman on to actually talk about this in a more informed way. In the meantime, let's move on. Let's take a break. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about self-driving cars and spaceships and maybe a little Snowden. We'll see. I'm bored with Snowden. Back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right. An opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. thanks. And now, back to the show. Okay, here I am back. Let me start out with Snowden, since I said I'm bored of him. Look, here's the deal. And I tweeted this as well. You know, Snowden was on for a long interview on television. I guess it was an hour-long spot on him. I guess it was an interview and some conversation about it afterwards. And that was edited down from a four-hour interview. Was the original. I have not watched it yet. I watched a bunch of Twitter conversation about it. People saying one thing or another about the various statements Snowden made, and then the whole thing about the NSA releasing the one email that he supposedly sent, and then Snowden saying, no, I sent more, blah, 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 blah. Look, I tweeted this. I'll repeat it here. Everybody made up their minds about this issue a year ago. The country is clearly divided into camps. There's the folks who think that Snowden did a valuable public service by making this stuff public, that this is an important debate, that the government has gone way too far in terms of what it does for surveillance. Then there are the folks who think that Snowden acted in a traitorous way by releasing this information that he shouldn't have. And anyway, there have been no real abuses done. Everything here is legal. Congress knew about it. Congress approved it. It's within the law. And we need this stuff in order to be able to maintain our safety anyway. Those are the two main camps. And I've seen over the last year, both sides sniping at the other, both sides making the same arguments over and over and over again. I think this is fundamentally one of those situations where these two camps come at the whole situation from fundamentally different assumptions about what's important in the world and what matters and what's okay and what's not okay, and never the twain shall meet. You know, because you don't see situations where, you know, the one side starts making their arguments and then the other side says, you know, I've never thought about that. Maybe I'm wrong. Everybody's just dug into their positions. And, you know, and every new revelation since then, we had a couple weeks ago this revelation about monitoring every phone call in what was it? The Bahamas. And then it was also revealed the second country was Afghanistan. And I think you've got, you know, a portion of the public that says every single phone call, oh my God, that's outrageous. I don't care if it's the Bahamas and not Americans. I don't care if it's Afghanistan and not America's. America, every single phone call is insane. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be monitoring in a more targeted basis. And then you've got the other group that says, well, of course you want to monitor as much as you possibly can so that you can look for patterns and you can find bad things. And even after the fact, if something blows up, you can go back and dig into what happened. And, you know, hey, if you're not a terrorist, if you're not a drug dealer, if you're not a criminal, you have nothing to worry about. And look, this argument has been going on forever. I think I mentioned at least once previously on the podcast that I was recently listening to actually the audiobook of Fear Itself, which is a book about the New Deal. And one of the things that came up, it was a pretty good book, by the way, although it was the first time I listened to an audiobook rather than reading a book. It's a very different experience. I don't think I got quite as in depth. I don't think as much was retained, but whatever. It's just a learning style thing. Anyway, an interesting book. But the thing that kept coming to me about it was how many of the debates that we're having today about freedom versus security versus and all of this kind of stuff. Exact same debate in the 1930s and 40s, within the realm of World War II, of course, and, you know, restrictions on free speech, surveillance, even worse stuff. And of course, we were actively at war. So spying was involved there too on the enemy as well. But there was a lot of domestic stuff. Anyway, this is not a new debate. This is not a new debate that boing, 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 boing. Apparently something went wrong there and it stopped recording and I continued talking for several more minutes and that's gone. So let me try to pick up the threads of my thought. As I was saying, not a new debate. Fundamentally, freedom versus security is one of the possible political spectrums out there. Liberal versus conservatives, another one. There are a variety of others. They don't all align with each other, obviously. But these are fundamental places where people have different views that are fairly ingrained. And, you know, it could be culture. It could be how they were brought up. There are even some studies that say there's a genetic component to how you feel about some of these issues. But in any case, people aren't changing their minds a lot. People have a instinctive way they react. And then all of the sort of analytical arguments you can bring to bear at that point are not so much, here's all of my analysis and therefore I came to this conclusion. It's really a lot more, you know, I start from the fundamental feeling that this is wrong. So therefore, let me collect a lot of evidence to describe why I believe it's wrong. It's justification after the fact. It's not some sort of, you know, scientific boom, 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 here's your thing. Fundamentally, if you're coming from different assumptions, different axioms about how the world works and what's important and what's not, you can look at exactly the same evidence and come to diametrically opposed conclusions. That's what's happening here. It's what happens on the abortion debate. And it's what happens on all kinds of debates. And I think that this is one of those cases where you've got ossified viewpoints. Everybody's dug in. Everybody believes what they believe. Nothing significant is going to change that. I've said with Yvonne before that, you know, unless we have sort of a fundamental revelation of something that is so, so clearly abusive, we're not going to see people changing their minds very much. And what do I mean by, you know, fundamentally abusive? I mean, it has to be not just like, for instance, Greenwald has said that his next big revelation is going to be a specific list of people who are monitored. Okay. So let's say we come up on that list and we find out, oh, Romney was being monitored by the NSA during 2012. You'd think that, okay, that by itself would be, oh my God, that's the clear abuse we were talking about. Well, maybe, maybe not. I think clearly that would be a political football that people would love to throw around regardless. But, you know, it's already been revealed that we've got mass surveillance where they're sucking up everything they possibly can. And with the sort of, you know, the three hops rule, if you do a little math on that, you realize that's practically the entire country already. If you're taking three hops from any foreigner, anybody who's not American, or even if you do three hops from anybody who's a foreigner that also has a few suspicious things against them or some associations, you've got a significant chunk of the American population. And it certainly would not actually be all that surprising if some of Romney's phone calls were caught up in that. After all, he talks to foreign people. He talks to foreign leaders. This would not be surprising. So, like, you know, you would have a lot of people say, if that happened, you know, no, look, this is just, you know, part of the big collection. You know, it's not all that scandalous because nobody actually looked at Romney's stuff. Nobody actually listened to it. It was just part of the stuff that was caught up in the big, big, massive vacuum cleaner of data so that we could look for patterns. Nobody actually used this data in a bad way. I think to make it the kind of real scandal that would actually start changing significant number of people's minds on this issue, you would have to have evidence that not just Romney's information was sucked up as part of some dragnet, but that information was specifically listened to, funneled to Obama, and used for political purposes during the 2012 campaign. Now, there, you'd start changing some minds. Now, that's not to say, I mean, even just saying, hey, Romney was sucked up, of course, political hay would be made of that. But it wouldn't be political hay about how how all of these programs are bad and we shouldn't be doing them. It would be political hay about Obama abusing them and about how Obama is bad, which is different than what I'm talking about in terms of changing minds. Because you'd have a lot of Republicans in that case, trying out to get Obama's heads, but John McCain wouldn't necessarily be doing a 180 and saying, therefore, we shouldn't be doing this kind of surveillance at all. Anyway, I don't know. I find it somewhat boring because nothing that's being talked about is going to change anybody's mind. It's not going to fundamentally change the nature of this debate. At least I haven't seen anything along those lines lately. I think what you're in for that is a long haul, maybe over the course of a generation, more people will start feeling one way versus the other. And a lot of that depends. Do we have another 9/11 or not? If we do, things move in one direction. If we don't, things move in the other. Because it's a lot easier to say, let's roll back the national security state if everything seems safe. If the world seems dangerous, then the other side wins that argument more often than not. And I think everybody knows which side of this argument I'm on. I want to roll back the surveillance state. I want to roll back the national security state. I think it's all way overdone. But as long as people feel scared, then security tends to win out over freedom. The one other reason I'm bored is because this is about Snowden. And every single thing that's concentrating about this man and what he did or what he didn't do and how he did it and what his motives were and all that, it's fundamentally a distraction from the underlying issues. I don't give a crap why Snowden ended up in Russia. I don't give a crap. Maybe he was a Soviet spy. Sorry, dating myself. Russian spy. Maybe from the very beginning he was a paid operative of the Russians. I don't actually think that's the case. But even if it was, it shouldn't change a damn thing. As long as what he revealed was true. Then the debate should just be about what are these programs? Are they appropriate programs? Are they things that the government should be doing? It's also, frankly, a distraction to say, is it legal or not? I don't freaking care if it's legal or not. The question is not if it's legal. The question is, should we be doing it? And if it's legal and we shouldn't be doing it, maybe the law should be changed. Anyway, Snowden specifically a distraction because it shouldn't be about him. And then even the other revelations as they come up, every single new one that comes out just seems to... Everybody gets deeper into their own positions. It's not changing minds. Therefore, less interesting than it would be otherwise. And again, maybe long term, over the course of many, many years, maybe viewpoints will continue to change. Bottom line on that, I really think it depends on how scared people are. And again, that goes back to that book about the New Deal entitled Fear Itself. And a good deal of the book was about how, you know, and of course that comes from FDR's inaugural address where, you know, we have nothing to fear but fear itself, speaking about some of the issues in the Great Depression. Fear and how people were reacting to their fears drove a significant amount of what happened during the 1930s and 1940s, and frankly, the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, the 1980s, all the way up to today. And people behave differently if they're afraid. And Thus, we are where we are. Because after 9/11, people were really afraid. Anyway, wow, did I talk a lot about this whole Snowden thing for not wanting to talk about it. Just like I talked about Yes, All Women for a lot longer than I wanted to talk about it. That's just how it goes, isn't it? Let's take another break. And then we'll talk about self-driving cars and spaceships. And then I really have to wrap it up because my self-imposed deadline for getting these podcasts out the door is coming up rapidly. I'm frankly probably going to miss it at this point. Anyway, we'll be back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, here we are again, and I was right. I did indeed miss my deadline. It's now Saturday UTC by a few minutes. Oh, well, I'll get it out as soon as I can get it out. I've been going back and forth with Alex and other things in between and blah, 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 and whatever. Anyway, self-driving cars and spaceships. Not self-driving spaceships, although they can do that too. Google showed off their prototype of their self-driving car. They've obviously been working on self-driving cars for years now. They've mainly been converted normal vehicles. this time, these are designed from the ground up to be self-driving. They're restricted really to the golf cart class under 25 miles per hour. That gives them lower safety requirements, all kinds of other stuff. Obviously, this is a prototype testing, moving to the next phase kind of thing. The biggest difference between the previous self-driving cars is these don't even have steering wheels, pedals, etc. They're designed from the ground up with the idea that the computer drives the car. You get in, you tell it where you want to go, and then you sit back and you do your thing, and the car handles all the driving. I'd always, when thinking about self-driving cars when we've talked about them before, the sort of mental model has been somewhat, you have your regular car and you put it in self-driving mode. And you're still behind the wheel, and you can still take over if you feel like it. And I think you probably will see some of that when this gets, fully commercialized. But I think what Google's producing with the fully self-driving car, where there isn't even an option for manual control, if it ends up being allowed by regulations, is really the direction to go here. I mean, basically, you're not really even talking about a car anymore. You're talking about like a transportation pod or something along those lines. And the notion really is this thing will take you from place to place. You aren't driving. You aren't thinking about it. You're not dealing with those mechanics. You're just doing whatever you want to do while it goes. I tweeted I want one. Of course, they're not going to be available for the general public yet. They're not actually selling these things. It's a prototype. It's a testing. It's a whatever. They're going to be limited trials in the Silicon Valley area soon. I want one. At this point, I got a new car like 2 years ago now, 2.5 years ago now. I fully hope that my new car lasts, 10, at least 10 years, maybe 15. When it dies, I want my next car to be a self-driving car. I don't want a steering wheel. I don't want any of that stuff. I want to be able to get in the car and tell it where to go. I mean, look, I can enjoy driving under certain circumstances, but most of the time, You know, even if I want, like, to take a scenic ride somewhere, it would be great to, like, be able to, like, sit there and take pictures or something and enjoy looking out the window and seeing everything go by as opposed to, like, worry about the actual driving. And, you know, the thing's going to be, it's going to be safer than human beings driving. I mean, I'm sure they'll have some glitches at first, but, you know, human beings are actually pretty bad drivers on average. I mean, and I'm an okay driver. It's been a while since I've got into an actual accident with another moving vehicle, like over a decade. And I've never been in a really serious one. But, you know, I've bumped things. I've gone over curbs. I've got a little scratch in my car from hitting a rock going out of my driveway. You know, things happen. I mean, it's a little scratch, but yeah, anyway, but these things will do better. They'll have better senses. It is so clearly the right direction to go in, so clearly where we want to be, that I'm very happy. Like, you know, I went to school at Carnegie Mellon University, which was one of the places where they were really pushing the envelope on self-driving vehicles back in the 80s and early 90s. And I remember seeing some of these early vehicles. They were built on top of big trucks. There were lots and lots of high-powered computers. And beep, 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 beep. Hey, once again, it stopped recording. I don't know why. It hasn't done this in, like, forever. And anyway, I only lost a few seconds this time. Anyway, I was saying at Carnegie Mellon, they had these cars. They were really slow, whatever. It was very, very early technology. It's amazing to see how far these things have gone. And while this still isn't consumer technology, I can't go out and buy one of these yet. It's at the point where you can see that it's just around the corner. They're almost there. They've got this stuff so that it's basically working, and they just need to have some refinements, and they need to work out the rough edges, get it ready for public consumption, obviously test the hell out of it, because there are safety concerns here. This isn't like a website where, you know, something goes wrong, oh well, I'll fix it tomorrow. This is something where something goes wrong, people die. So you have to be very, very careful, and I would expect them to do lots and lots of testing here. And of course, there's going to be the regulatory hurdles. And this is one area where I hope government is smart enough to just get the hell out of the way and let this stuff happen. Because, you know, you could have, you know, Detroit go in there and lobby and say, we don't want this to happen. And, you know, there are all these reasons, and you can give all kinds of reasons why this might be bad, or there might be concerns here, or you want to slow roll it, or whatever. Forget about it. Let this happen. Let this move forward. Let it move forward quickly. And, you know, frankly, the traditional automakers need to get themselves in gear and jump on the future here. I mean, you've got, between this kind of stuff and what Tesla is doing, you know, you see the future of the automobile starting to develop. And the traditional automakers, while they certainly have done research in these areas, seem to be moving extremely slowly. You don't see any of the traditional automakers doing, I mean, some of them are doing electric cars. You can get a Chevy Volt, you can get some other things, but none of them are going after it with the intensity that Tesla is. And you see the traditional automakers playing around with various technologies to enhance driving, to have safety features to keep you in your lane, or to automatically slow down if you're coming up on someone too fast, or do collision avoidance and auto parking and various things like that. But nobody's jumping into it with the level that Google is. So you got to wonder, you know, if those in the existing industry want to be relevant 20 years from now, they need to jump on this. They need to be embracing the new technologies. They need to be figuring out how to move beyond gasoline. They need to be figuring out how to get into the self-driving game. And it's going to be a very different industry. As lots of people pointed out, you know, with a self-driving model, it changes the dynamics of, you know, buy versus rent, where it may very well make sense to not own your own car and instead have, you know, essentially evolved taxi services that have fleets of these things that you can call one whenever you want and have one show up at your house in a couple minutes and then go to wherever you want to go and then let it go again. So the model may be dramatically different. Hi, Alex. Did your movie end? Yes. Okay. Anyway, self-driving cars, very, very cool. I want one. I want them now. I want government to stay out of the way and let these things happen and see where it evolves. But it's coming sooner than one might think. Because in the past, it's always been, yeah, it's in the future, but a long way off. Now it's close. Alex wants me for a minute. We'll be back after this, and I'll talk a little bit about SpaceX Dragon V2.
Wait a minute. Did I see the jets or is Queen down?
I don't know.
It's Jack.
Okay, we're going downstairs. Back after this, guys.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
And here we are. Last segment. Promise. Dragon, SpaceX. New space capsule. We'll take human passengers into orbit, into the space station. Look, this is another area where the reaction is, hey, look, the future is coming. The space capsule that was shown looks pretty cool. It looks very high tech. It looks very 21st century. It does a powered landing, on a controlled powered landing. None of this parachute land somewhere within a 100-mile radius kind of thing. They look like they're going to be flight tests probably in another year, and actual human flights probably a year after that. So this is getting pretty close. And the comparison here is obviously the U.S. government grounded its shuttles because they were old and getting to be unsafe a while back. There was a program for their replacement. We're still ain't there. We're going to see this Dragon X capsule before we see the official U.S. government version of this. Now, admittedly, the official U.S. government version has higher ambitions for further range and blah, blah, blah. They're looking at sort of preliminaries for a possible back to the moon or a possible trip to an asteroid or a possible trip to Mars. The SpaceX capsule is just for going to the space station. But I think the clear difference here is you actually are seeing a hunger to push things forward and to innovate and to do these things. And so far, these projects have been, you know, financed by billionaires. You know, you've got this, you've got Virgin Galactic, you've got another project by Mr. Jeff Bezos. All of these projects are of these sorts of things where somebody with a lot of money is able to put a lot of money into these projects without necessarily expecting an immediate return on investment. Like, they all hope that there will be at some point future further down the line. But right now, these things are all just, you know, eating money. However, they're building some real stuff. They're pushing the envelope. They're moving these things forward in a much faster way than the governmental projects. And also, you know, I just want to point out, you know, if you look at all of the previous official government spaceships and such, including the shuttle, you know, they look fairly, let's say they're not the coolest of things. I mean, and not like the space, like the capsule itself, maybe, hey, it's a capsule, but like, you look at the interior, it's got, they've got some design elements in there. They're making it so it looks like it comes out of a science fiction show. Whereas the government stuff is very utilitarian. And you can understand the reasons why, of course, but this is one of those examples where, yet again, you know, you could never have necessarily done the Apollo program as a private industry program, or maybe you could have, but certainly not in the 1960s. It would have taken a lot longer before anybody started to do this as a private venture, because you took, you know, the billions and billions of tax dollars and hiring up huge numbers of people to just get it done. And of course, there's a whole Cold War behind that. But now we're at the point where it is feasible for private industry to start thinking about space travel and start thinking about commercializing it and how you would make this into something that you would is not just a highly limited thing for a few highly specialized people, but where this may, where we can actually open up this to something you can see expanding to more and more people. I mean, obviously Virgin Galactic's effort, they're already selling seats. I mean, we're talking a few $100,000 at a pop, you know, but those prices are going to get driven down over time. You know, I fully expect, and there was a time when I doubted this, because when I was a kid, of course, everybody expected this, but there was a time when I doubted this. But at this point, I fully expect that in my lifetime, an orbital tourist type trip will be within reach of maybe not everybody, but like upper middle class Americans will be able to think about it. It'll still probably be a big deal. It won't be like, you know, just, hey, let's go to space for the weekend. But it'll be within reach. And this is awesome. This is one of those, you know, we talked about self-driving cars. Now we're talking about private space travel. And hell, almost every week on here, we talk about things like the iPad and the iPhone and these devices that, you know, the power that is in your hand was the stuff of science fiction, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And it's already here and we already have it. And it makes me very excited for where the future will continue to take us as these things continue to develop and push forward and great stuff. Just like on the self-driving cars, on the commercial spacecraft, I hope government has the sense to get out of the way. I mean, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, because not everybody agrees, but there's probably some point in regulation here. I mean, these things can be dangerous. You could potentially hurt other people. You know, you don't want a rocket malfunctioning and landing in the middle of a major city. So there's a point, a place for regulation here, but I hope government has the sense to mainly get out of the way and let the people who are willing to really push the envelope and innovate here, and let them do it and let them push forward and see where we can go. Because there's a lot that could be done here. I mean, we're talking about, you know, there's another group out there that's researching the feasibility of doing commercial mining of asteroids. And imagine the changes to our energy situation if that was able to be made feasible. And the sustainability issues in terms of, you know, hey, we only got one planet, we'll use up all the stuff, and then what? Well, we'll go somewhere else and get it. You know, there's so much potential in these areas. if government just gets out of the way, lets people explore, lets people do these things, you know, and okay, I'm sure there are potential for abuse, et cetera, et cetera. Let's deal with that when we get to it. For the time being, let people innovate, let people push forward. It's an exciting time to be watching these kinds of things happen. You know, I want it all now. You know, I know it's within my lifetime, but, and I think that's a reasonable prediction, but, you know, I want to be able to do it now. I saw that spaceship and I'm like, I want one. I want everything apparently, but you know, maybe I don't actually want one, but hey, wouldn't that be so cool to take a ride in that thing? Now, you got to get to the point where it has a safety record comparable to like cars or airplanes. You know, the safety record in spaceflight so far is still pretty darn scary. You know, a significant, you know, we're talking, I don't know the current percentages. I mean, the space shuttle, it was like 1 out of 50 blew up or didn't make it back, I should say, that with the two that crashed. But overall, the record's probably a little bit better, but maybe still 1 out of 100 chance of not getting back. Those are still the kind of odds you don't necessarily want to just take. But you know, if you've got the commercial vendors pushing this, you know, they're not going to accept that. They're going to rapidly push forward in terms of safety and everything. I mean, I don't know. We'll see where we are in a few decades. But again, it's so exciting to watch this stuff. It's so exciting. I want it now. I don't want these things to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years out. I want them to be now. I mean, I guess it's better than being 50 to 100 years out, but come on. Now. Now, okay, we got these. I don't really want the flying car. To be honest, I've never had a super interest in the flying car. But, you know, here's some other things that I do want that have been on the agenda a long time and just haven't been showing up yet. I want the personal home robot. I cannot tell you how much I freaking need, what was her name? Rosie from the Jetsons. I need the robot that when we leave the house goes and puts all our stuff away where it belongs, does the dishes, does the laundry, takes care of all this stuff. And you come home to a wonderfully clean house with everything like immaculate, you know, I want that. I want that today. That's the next on my list. I mean, I'm sure I could figure out other things, but that's the next thing on my list. They really need to get on that. A Roomba just doesn't cut it. Anyway, that's a show. Thank you for putting up with yet another solo show. And next week, like I said, we'll have Bruce on. And so it'll be a little bit different flavor than when it's Yvonne and I. But hopefully we'll have some interesting things to talk about. I'm sure we will. There's always stuff going on. And, you know, we'll be back next week. In the meantime, email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com. We love your questions and comments. And if you have any suggestions for next week, send those in too. Or topics in general for when Yvonne's back as well. In the meantime, have a great week. Bye, everyone.